Right, so last week I shared around this passage of Scripture, and I just want to push in with it again this morning. It's a passage that we know so well. The imagery and the metaphor in it is simple, and it's like we probably all get it. It's like it's something that you could read, and you don't need anyone to explain or to preach on, but so be it. That's my job. So that's what you're going to get this morning. And then next week, you're still on for next week. So next week, I'm not preaching. I'm not away at all. But Jackie is going to be sharing next week. So I always like to get Jackie to share at some point, and it's always good to get her in the holidays. So Jackie's going to be sharing with us next week. So verse 25 from John chapter 6. When they found him on the other side of the lake, obviously Jesus, they asked him, "Rabbi, when did you get here?" And Jesus answered and he said to them, "Very truly I tell you, you're looking for me not because you saw the signs I performed, because you ate the loaves and had your fill." So again, I shared on this last week and you know the story. What has happened here is that Jesus has fed the 5,000. He's performed this incredible miracle of the loaves and the fish. And this little boy brought his patkos for the day, and the people were hungry, and he took the patkos, and he gave thanks, he lifted it to heaven, and he gave thanks, and he fed thousands of people. This absolute miracle. And you know, I've shared this before, John's gospel, John's narrative is structured around seven what they call signs or miracles. But they're not miracles, they're actually signs. And this is one of the key signs in the whole story that John tells, not because that the people had their fill, as Jesus said, but that the people would know and have a revelation and open their eyes to see who Jesus really is. So that's the seven signs in John. And the entire purpose of John's gospel is summed up in this, that you might believe. So that you'd see who Jesus is and believe in him. And so Jesus says, "Well, thanks for that. You didn't get the sign. You just had your stomach filled." And then he says, "Do not work for food that spoils, but for food that endures for eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you. For on him, God has placed his seal of approval." And so they asked him, "What must we do to the works that God requires?" And Jesus answered, The work of God is this, to believe in the one that he has sent. That we would see him, that we would believe him. It's called off. Turn it off. So they asked him, "What sign then will you give that we may see it and believe you? What will you do? Our ancestors ate the manna in the wilderness. As it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat." And Jesus said to them, "Very truly I tell you, it is not Moses who gave you the bread from heaven." It's like, you know, you have these stories with Jesus the whole time. He goes, "Guys, you're so doff." Okay, Moses was there. Moses gave you nothing. Okay, it's my Father who gives you the true bread from heaven. The bread of God is the bread that comes down from heaven and gives life to the world. "Sir," they said, "give us this bread." And Jesus declared, "I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never go hungry. Whoever believes in me will never be thirsty." And so do we believe that? Can you and I really believe that he is bread for life? And that if we come to him, we will never be hungry. And then if we believe in him, we will never be thirsty. So Jesus' miracle echoes the miracle in the wilderness. It's impossible for Jews. I mean, when Jesus performed this miracle, Jewish people would immediately have been thinking, wow, we've seen this story before. Our ancestors had supernatural provision in the Exodus story. And even if they didn't get it, the whole of chapter 6 is just punctuated by language that refers back to the manna in the wilderness and to Moses. And so here is this pivotal story in the history of Israel. And the Israelites at this time they've really sort of, they look to Moses as this prophet, as this, this figure that loomed so large in their history, in their worldview, in their theology. Even to the point, it's like, well, Moses gave us bread in the wilderness. And Jesus is like, oh, you're missing the point again. Okay. But here again is this just incredibly, like, the seminal story. And the challenge then in the wilderness for the Jews, the challenge at that time was, could they? God had performed this incredible, miraculous event. They crossed through the Red Sea. Like, there's just like supernatural stories of miracles and signs and wonders and clashes of gods and all of that. And then they go through the Red Sea. Here is the superpower of the world that gets this varm klap and is obliterated. But now, on a daily basis, what do the Israelites do? They are stuck in a desert. There's nothing to eat. There's no food. There's no shelter. They are like at the mercy of the elements and whoever's behind the next mountain. And the challenge in the Exodus story is, can we trust God? Can he lead us? Is there a purpose? Did he bring us? And they asked Moses that. Did he really do all of that to bring us into the wilderness to let us die? And so the trusting was, is there a purpose to this? Is there a future? Are we going anywhere? And on a basic level, on a simple, simple level, will we have food to eat today? Will there be water in this desert? Will we be warm tonight? And will there be shade, or are we going to burn to death each day? So, I mean, and picture this. The provision was daily. It was a daily thing. I mean, here is this God that has done this incredible miracle. And he says, I'll give you bread for today. And tomorrow, you can get up and I'll give you bread again. I mean, that's like quite a stingy thing to do, hey? I mean, just fill up a barn and they go, cool, we can chill. There's food for the month. Okay? Like, something like that. You know, write a check that we know we can cash this, you know, at the next Palestinian food market. Stupid, okay? But here's this thing. Every morning, the Israelites had to wake up and think, we're going to go out, and will there be manna? Will there be quail? And I'm sure after 40 years, they got to the point they thought, yeah, it's a done deal, you know? But can you imagine those first few mornings? Can you imagine, like, Moses gets up and he says, wake up tomorrow morning and go gather manna and quail. Can you imagine going to sleep that night thinking, I've got kids to feed, I've got a family to support. Is there another plan? You know? I mean, that, and so daily, the challenge was to wake up and say, has God come through for us? As he led them every day, will that cloud be there or are we going to fry? And at night, will there be the same pillar that was this incredible cloud that brought shade, but when the sun went down, you actually saw that it was this fire, this, I think, this presence of God in their midst that scared the enemies away and the wild animals. So it was protection. And it was warmth. And again, that was a daily struggle. So the Exodus story is, I mean, it's just more than history, hey? It really is more than history. It's a powerful story of deliverance, of miraculous deliverance, supernatural miracles, and provision. But even for us today, it challenges us about trusting God. And it gives us these metaphors, even for our lives today. Can we trust God to provide for us, to protect us, to lead us? Can we rely on God? Can you rely on God? For where are we going in the next few weeks and months? What is your plan for me, for my family, in this next year or season? And can I trust you with every aspect of my life? So sometimes bread might be just bread. But sometimes bread might be, I need wisdom today. I need leading. I need deliverance. And so, what is bread for you today? It's amazing, eh? That's why you pay me such an incredible salary. It's like, what is bread? What is bread for you at this time? What does that mean to you? So, perhaps again, it's food, shelter, provision. But perhaps it's something deeper. And you know, when you have a stable job, and if you have a house and an income or a pension or whatever, there's some stable income, not you, like, you know, Ben and people that are more contracting and things like, well, maybe it's a bit more risky, you know. But like, if you have a stable income, it's actually quite hard to trust God for bread, because that's not what you need to trust him for. And so when we say Jesus is the bread of life, it's a bit theoretical, because you can be, well, I'm not really worried about bread. You know, I'm worried about whether I have a job next year, and then that'll become, but you know, at the moment, it's not about bread. And I thought of this, I'll go on this tangent for nothing, but isn't it incredible? But like, God has a curveball for that. So if you have a stable income, if you had historically or today a means of income and provision and sustenance, God has this huge curveball. He says, cool. So give a tenth of the first of what you get. Give the first fruits of your offering. And you go, but that's stupid. That's just ridiculous. Now I am, you provide for me, and now you expect me to give back to you. I mean, it's just a bit crazy, isn't it? So things like tithing, in actual fact, it's a powerful and challenging reminder that what we have is from God. That through providence, might be that you were, you know, born into a rich family and a rich society. You might have certain gifts that are, you know, almost natural to you. Whether through providence or, you know, even more on a regular basis, there's a sense in which we give and we are called to be faithful in our giving because it's a declaration that we trust God and that He, in actual fact, is the source of everything. And again, that's quite a challenge. So the challenge in our world at the moment is that we never have enough. I mean, it's a real issue in our age at the moment is that we will never have enough. We will never have enough to give, whether you're tithing, whether you're supporting, you know, NGOs or organizations or something like that, because there's never enough, because there's always something more that we need. Our needs and our wants are ever increasing. We live in a world that is bombarding us with, you need more. You need more of this, and you need a new this, and you need a new that, and whatever. And so, in a sense, we live in a world where it's like we just always need something else. I'll never forget. So you remember, some of you know the story, but Bev went on sabbatical. She'd worked in corporate, you know, her whole life and had an amazing job and worked herself to the bone, had a heart attack. And my youngest daughter, Sarah, turned around and said to her, your job is killing you. And it's like, you know, all the cardiologists and everything like that, it's like, you know, well, was it this? Was it, you know, no. There are all these technical reasons and that. And sometimes out of the mouth of babes, eh? And so you remember all that story. Many of you prayed, and it was an amazing miracle. And then, so she resigned her job. Okay, that got me praying. Okay, so she resigned, and she was going to take a six-month sabbatical. She's not here this morning, so I can say all of these things. Sabbatical was like 2 years, okay? But she took a six-month sabbatical. So if you part of a corporate world and that, there was insurance and things like that. So she had a heart attack. They paid her out money. It's interesting. They pay you out. So you don't die. You have a heart attack. So life insurance pays you out. Someone can explain to me this afterwards. But now it's impossible for you to get life insurance because no one's going to insure you because you've had a heart attack. So I don't know why I'm even going there. Okay, I'm not an actuary. I don't understand these things. Okay, but so they give her some money and things like that. And I'm like, cool. Well, that'll last us 6 months, whatever. What does Bev decide to do? So she's at home. She decides she wants a new TV. Okay. It's like, so now I'm sitting there and I'm going, we have a TV. We have a big TV. Our TV's, it's a TV. You know, and it's not a TV, it's a screen. You know what I mean? You just plug things into it. It's a monitor of sorts or whatever. She decides she wants a bigger TV. It's like she wants to sit and she's on sabbatic. She wants to watch, it was like the French Open and then Wimbledon and that. And it's like she wants to be able to see the ball going all over the place and that. And then she doesn't have very good eyesight and things like that. So she wants a bigger TV. She gets this TV. Now, it's not, I think the TV's massive. But we've got this alcove. So there's this old house that we got. There's this alcove and the TV fits in there. And now she looks at it and she goes, I could have actually got a bigger one. I'm not kidding you not, eh? So this is like 5 years ago, whenever she gets this TV. Now she's watching, and she loves a girl, like Sarah and Bev watch tennis. Like they watch like these tennis tournaments that you've never heard of. And they sit and they watch them. And then now she's kind of like, you know what? We've got friends that have got a bigger TV. That would be a nice TV. And it's like, it's a silly metaphor. Okay, but it says to me, you know, there's a simple, you know, do you know you can solve that problem? Is you can just move closer. You can just like pull the chair closer. Just move the couch. You can sit in, like you can, even if the TV's this big, just sit right in front of it. So the point is that there's nothing wrong with our TV. There was nothing wrong with the first TV. There's nothing wrong with, we're not getting another TV, believe me. Okay. But it's like sometimes there's always something bigger. There's always something better. You go to a friend's house and you're like, that's a nice TV. I want that size. Or shoes or clothes or jobs or cars or whatever it is. So John van der Laar wrote this a couple of weeks ago. He said, the unfortunate temptation of our time is to fill our lives with even more stuff. We are constantly bombarded with images of things we don't have. It can be sexual partners, food, objects, or lifestyles. And we constantly encouraged to go after these bright, shiny objects of our desires. That is the world that we live in. So, you know, it's the same with, I mean, these patterns that we get from the Israelites. It's the same with the Sabbath. Pharaoh expected slaves to work 7 days a week. In actual fact, in the ancient world, it was a given. You didn't have a six-day working week. The ancient world worked every day. I mean, for the Romans and the Greeks, and they discovered these Jews, and they were like the complete wombats. It's like, what is wrong with them? Why would you take a perfectly good seven-day working week and just cut out a day? It's ridiculous. And now the Greeks and the Romans had festivals, and they would have public holidays and feast days and all kinds of things. So they weren't opposed to taking a day off from time to time. But a day set aside to say, God created the world, and he rested for a day. And we as people created in his image will set aside a day, not just for rest, but for worship, for recreation, for relationship and family, to engage with creation. That is what the Sabbath is about. The Sabbath is not just about a day off. It's a day to be with those that you love in his world, celebrating God in his world. And you know, even today, that is a huge issue. Can we trust God enough not to work 7 days a week? Because I don't know about you, but my to-do list is never done. There's always something else to do. There's always a crisis. There's always more work. There's always someone who wants something now. And the challenge in our world, and it's got worse since COVID, the challenge in our world is that we are immediately available. I'm on holiday. It's fine. Can you just pop in on the Zoom meeting or Teams meeting or whatever? Or it's like I've got a meeting in the afternoon. No, that's fine. Can we meet tonight after dinner or before work? Or you know what I mean? So there's this, like, people just expect that you're available 24/7. A friend of mine who runs his own company, his partner, this was many years ago, his partner came back from leave and came into the office and did what people in, you can't believe how much I worked on my holiday. It was like, I took all this work away and I did all this work and that. And this friend of mine turned to him and said, you're an idiot. It's because that wasn't why you went on holiday. You went on holiday to leave your work here and spend time with the family. And there are other partners and people who could do that. But what happens, and I mean, it doesn't work for everyone. I'm just telling you what he did in his company. He said, that wasn't the reason we sent you on holiday. But sometimes that I'm so busy I had to work on holiday is not about the fact that maybe you did have something that you had to attend, but it's more, I can't be missed. I can't be replaced. Or the fear that what if I go away for a week and they realize they don't need me? So here's the same issue. In Exodus, in the wilderness, and today, can we trust God? Can we trust Him for His provision? Can we trust Him with our lives? And sometimes simply stopping and celebrating the Sabbath or whatever it is this powerful, it's a subversive message of trust. I will believe God that I can get the work done this week that I need to do. I can believe God that if I go on holiday or say no to a meeting, if they fire me, He's got a plan for me. That's a bit ridiculous, eh? But it's that level of trust. So the challenge today is, can we structure our lives around trusting God? The story of the Exodus event and the wilderness event, and the story now that is mirrored in Jesus' miracle, is Jesus is now saying, can you trust me to provide for you, to be your bread? And again, I was going to spend more time, I'm not going to spend too much time on this, but it's obvious. Jesus is talking at a deeper level. He's not talking simply about taking a day off, what we're going to eat, what our provision is. He's talking about an eternal need that He will fill. Can we trust Him for eternal life with Him? Can we trust Him with our entire lives? And that we know that if we follow Him in some profound, crazy, but way that we don't even always get. Let me say it like that. I can't explain it all to you. It's this risk. Can we say yes to Him and believe that we will never hunger and thirst again on every level of our lives? Every level of our lives. So it points to the sense of deep meaning in this world, real significance and purpose. Whatever age and stage of life we're at, can I say, why am I here? What do you have for me? What is this next season? And so let's wrap it up like this. The disciples still try to commodify what Jesus offered. Jesus stood there going, I'm the bread of life. And they said, give us this bread that we will always have it. That was their response. They still try to commodify Jesus. And you know, the church still does that. We do that all. Come to Jesus and your life will be fine. He'll make you healthy, wealthy, and wise. Or whatever. Okay? Like something that we're selling. But you know, Jesus offered eternal life, but he offered relationship. Because he didn't say, come and get it. He said, come to me. Come to Jesus. And throughout the Gospels, what did he say to people? He said, follow me. In actual fact, follow me and you might fall out with your family. Follow me, it might impact on your inheritance. You know? Follow me, maybe you're going to have to leave some stuff behind, said to the rich young ruler. Maybe you can't bring all of that with you. I don't know how that message preaches in a real prosperity. Okay, but let's not go there. Okay. Be naughty. You know? But Jesus' message was, come to me. In this passage, he says, come to me. Throughout the Gospels, he said, come and follow me. And then he said, believe. What does that mean? It means, trust me. Come and trust me. And that is the challenge that we have today. Because as we walk out the store, every other voice is opposing that. Every time you look at your phone, you look out the window of your car as you're driving, you turn on the TV, even as you meet with people, the challenge is completely different. Jesus says, there is food that'll fill that need. They go, yes. And he says, it's me. Come and follow me.